Hi, I'm Bruce Hilliard, your friendly host of a podcast I launched late September of 2017. Here's why I did it and what I hope it brings to the listeners. I set up the Better Each Day podcast radio show as a platform or a stage for writers, creators, dreamers, visionaries, or just ordinary people that want to share something they're proud of. Kind of a show and tell like we did as kids in the classroom. You may remember some of the kids in the classroom were interested in what you got, some wanted to learn, some liked and respected you, and some didn't. Some of the kids were encouraging. There were always the critics that ridiculed and in some cases humiliated the presenter and discouraged them from ever standing in front of an audience again. Well, this is a platform to encourage and inspire people to step out of their comfort zones just a little. All guests and everyone interested can gain access to links to each other, and the interaction can only be good for everyone. Sharing ideas is huge. When it all comes together, at least to me, it's a really cool thing. A gesture of harmony. In these interviews, I don't take too much time talking about myself, my own thoughts and music. It's about the guests, and here's why. The guests come from all walks, all music genres, all ages, some philosophers, some technicians. Some aren't even musicians, or at least they say they aren't. Some deal with personal tragedy, and then there are those that laugh. There are some nervous, and some are poised. One thing is for sure, they all share in the same hope of making things better. And for that, I thank all of my guests. This show is unique in that the guests not only get a chance to tell the world about themselves and their craft, that's what the guests get. But the listeners, they get the backstories about the guests and whatever they're presenting, what it's all about, and the insights to help them understand the composition or whatever it may be. In doing so, the work, song, book, story, it can create more intimacy and emotion and touch the listener, bring them closer to reaching the writer's intention. There are no right or wrong answers here. We focus on ideas, thoughts, emotions, ideas. This is the endeavor. To me, there really isn't a better way, a more universal way to reach people than music and the backstories. It's become the norm to go through our days being barraged with information, most of which we don't understand. Most of which is never fully explained, and we go on to the next thing. My goal is to create an understanding of the songs or whatever the guest is presenting. I always publish show notes with further information and links to even more on the podcast website. In those show notes, I made a point to use hyperlinks to more information so the listeners can use the show notes to dig deeper into the story. So once again, this is a stage for the creative, young and old, unknown, as well as famous. An opportunity to share with thousands of people what normally may have only been a short song that gets played in the privacy of a bedroom to an audience of a cat or a goldfish. By playing this stage, it becomes meaningful and reaches out to what I hope someday will be a community of songwriters and creators that can use this platform to gain and have more fun with it and maybe move up to the next level. It's free, as in no money, and easy to do. Most of the chats are done via telephone and Skype. They are pre-recorded and we always have a good time doing them. I was advised to talk a little bit about me. You'll notice in the interviews, I don't spend a lot of time talking about myself. It's about the guests. But I'll take this opportunity to explain my backstory and how I came about putting this project together. Ever since I can remember, music has been my passion. I come from a musical family that lived in a musical town. We sat in musical chairs and we made musical sounds. That's the Dr. Seuss version, I know. My first memory of the guitar is of Jimmy Dodd from the Mickey Mouse Club. He's the writer of the TV show's theme song, M-I-C-K-E-Y, and hey there, hi there, ho there. I didn't really understand what he was doing, but it seemed like he attracted a lot of people to just listen to what he had to say. He wrote many songs for the show, all with warm messages, and somehow attracted my curious three-year-old noggin. I was barely 3 years old. I remember he would captivate the Mouseketeers with his stories. Just Jimmy and a guitar, and it looked like a mouse. I had no idea what he was talking about, but it looked very friendly, and he was cool with the people. Fast forward to the early 60s, Kingston Trio, Elvis, Bob Dylan, folk songs, and eventually people from my era, the Beatles and the pop music of the 60s that will forever be having a party in my brain. When I was a little boy, my parents said that someday the family would all go to Disneyland. I saw it on TV all the time. We had a Viewmaster, It had images of Tomorrowland. And to me, everything was Disney and music. So I saved my money, penny at a time. Years went by, and when it became apparent that we most likely were never going to Disneyland, I took my life's earnings and bought a $90 electric guitar. Smart move. I was obsessed. I listened. I learned from a chord book and just anywhere I could copy and gain ability to play. And that's what I did. I come to find out that most guitar players did it that way too. My brothers bought me a Learn to Play Guitar with Adventures, two albums actually, where the Adventures played variations of their songs and taking out one of the guitars and you filled in the thing. So it would be a Secret Agent Man minus the lead guitar, and then you'd play the lead guitar. So you are learning not only how to play the parts, but how to arrange the song with bass, a couple guitars, and drums. What a great learning tool. Next, I wanted to learn how to ad lib so I could play solos and play lead guitar. I learned scales from diagrams, one of them being the blues scale, which translated quickly to Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, those guys. I was playing blues and rock music on top of my beginner folk repertoire at age 12. It sounded pretty awful, but I was a proud beginner. At that point, I didn't care. I was obsessed. I was reading Guitar Player magazine, practicing every day, and I'd become a music nerd with crazy ambition. I was also playing trumpet in the school program. There was a ton of learning to get from that too, but guitar was my main passion. By junior high, I was forming bands with my buddies and performing in some of the greatest basement, garage, and attic venues in hometown Aberdeen, Washington. We played loud and proud. Chord shorting out, dead strings, PA systems that fed back as part of the mix. We played loud. So loud, objects in the house would vibrate off shelves. The term punk hadn't really been invented yet, but that's what we were playing. And we were actually punks. After experimenting with punk and parody bands with names like Vomit Launch, The Hollow Toilet Authority, Denny and the Chadwicks, and it goes on, high school graduation came around and it meant, get a little more serious, Brucey. Right before I graduated from high school, I got together with a couple of guys I grew up with, a couple of new guys, and we formed a six-piece rock band, final months of my senior year of high school. Man, talk about dreamers. We were hell-bent on doing as much original material as we could. And so we did, despite the fact that a lot of the taverns and venues we played frowned on playing original music. We did it anyway. They wanted cover songs, like the records you heard on AM radio, so their customers would dance and drink more beer. I remember hearing shouts from the crowd to play Freebird and Proud Mary. We didn't play those songs in particular. We did play a lot of covers. Looking back on it, we probably should have. Those were classics. We played about 70% covers and the rest originals. We had so many ideas for new songs that practices got almost violent sometimes. It was competitive to see who would come up with the best stuff. As a result, when it came time to us to be ready to stand on our own with our own material, we were ready. We were our own band and the perfect opening act for a lot of other bands. So, we had some fun. Some of the notable performances included opening for Heart, The Ramones, Dr. Hook, Lee Michaels, and some of the regionally known bands. Heart and The Ramones are now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it's fun to look back at how green we all were. But man, the enthusiasm was incredible. This is our band Amber Rain in 1976, jamming out with me playing a six-finger guitar solo. We'll be right back. At age 21, I decided to leave the band and be a responsible, conforming kind of guy and go to college and study music. I ended up with a degree in music from Washington State University. I continued to play solo through those years. It became harder and harder for bands to book gigs because most clubs were following the trend of the disco format. All vinyl and all of the new CDs. I did take a short-term job as an MC for a male strip show. I laugh only slightly when I say it was the best job I ever had. The money was good, better than music money, and I didn't have to strip. I was too shy. I left that up to a bunch of other guys. Women loved them. Most of them were gay, and that made the show even more of a hoot. After the years of around 1980-81, after more band and strip shows, I went back to WSU to study journalism. Washington State was becoming my home. Not by choice, but it needed to happen. While I was there, once again, I was playing solo. I started a business doing singing telegrams as a gorilla, Miss Piggy, and some freaky-looking cape superhero dude in tights named Captain Delirious. That, again, was one of the best jobs I ever had. Through all this time, I always wrote songs. I made rough draft recordings of them, and that turned out to be a good thing. Otherwise, I would have forgotten them. After graduating with my communications degree, I worked for three major corporations, General Electric, Sears, and NEC America, all of which laid me off. I was well into my 40s and wondering what went wrong. I thought if I'd worked diligently for these companies, someday I could retire with my gold watch and move on to the happy village where all successful people go to live out the rest of their blissful lives. Wrong. It just didn't turn out that way at all. Maybe the hippies of the 60s with the anti-establishment, stick-it-to-the-big-guy philosophy were right. I don't really consider my time conforming to the punch-in, punch-out type jobs a failure, but I will say this, experience is the very best teacher. I tried my hand in real estate, painting, and I continued writing songs, songs that at that point I thought no one would ever hear, or would they? As I got into my 60s, I became more and more inspired by my failures. I still had a strong desire to play music, but I didn't want to go back and play the clubs, weddings, and parties. The recording studio was going to be my new friend. I had all this knowledge and desire to share with young people with the same passion, the same hit or miss strategy, but yet passion, that I did when I went off to college when I was 21. A few more years went by. I had a radio show in Ocean Shores, Washington for just a short period of time, and during that time, I got the idea of doing a talk show that features songwriters and musicians that share their backstories. The problem was, I had to convince a radio station to somehow allow me to do it. This was going to be a challenge with a degree of difficulty that would prevent me from ever doing it at all, and if I didn't come up with a workaround or a way to bypass the radio stations, it never would have happened. How could I get the audio out to the masses and share this backstory idea? This could have been a perfect time to give up and forget about it. So, I emailed a radio personality acquaintance, Bob Rivers, and asked him for his thoughts. He had a long-running morning show out of Seattle and was very friendly and accommodating. Yeah, he pointed out to me, radio's probably not the way to do it. And here's a quote. He wrote, "Radio is like whips and buggies or phone booths, obsolete. What you want to do is a podcast." And I said, okay, what's a podcast? I had no idea. To this day, for my purposes, a podcast is a listen-on-demand radio show, basically, that transmits over the internet as opposed to radio waves. I focused more and more on a podcast that reflected what I wanted to do, and that was to develop an internet presence and a community and put really good content together for my listeners. Content being a huge factor. Content that isn't too technical, instead human interest stories, more like a coffee table book than a textbook. I could curate my own show, and the creative limits were minimal. Listen on demand and quality content. What an awesome opportunity. This process took way longer than I ever imagined, but I think I learned more in a year than I did in two, maybe three, maybe 4 years of college. But the Mickey Mouse TV show, to college degrees, garage bands, strip shows, singing telegrams, painting, and real estate, and all the valuable relationships on the way, all culminated. I have felt then, and I still feel, that there's something valuable to gain from my guests, the listeners, and myself by putting the Better Each Day podcast radio show together and producing the very best content I can and doing it for a very long time. I encourage anyone to do a podcast. The first episode was published on September 29th, 2017. That was my 62nd birthday. I am so gracious to have had this opportunity to talk at you, and thank you so much for listening. Make it better each day.
celebration. People get together, they feel all alone. Everybody stands staring at their phones. I need your number, I'll give you a call and say, hey, what's going on? I got a feeling, I don't know, doesn't anybody fall in love no more? No, 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 doesn't anybody fall in love no more? Time. So many miles.